The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. Today's program will, in the first half, focus on band music, instrument related to a concert by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, which is performing tonight at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston, along with the jazz ensemble at Eastern. The program is called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz. That starts at 7:30, and I'll be talking with interim band director Alan Sullivan on the show. And then I'll be talking with folk singer Bill Staines, who is going to be in Peoria on Sunday at Forest Park Nature Center. It's actually an interview that I did with Bill Staines a year or so ago when he was last in our area. And I thought, as long as he's here again, we'll rebroadcast that. It's live and local. Hope you'll stay tuned. We just heard a piece called Grayson Dance. It's by David Holsinger, and it was performed by the Wind Symphony at the University of Nevada at Reno, conducted by A.G. McGranahan III. And with me on the phone right now is the former associate director of bands at Reno, Alan Sullivan. He is now interim director of bands at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And the Wind Symphony there is going to be performing with, well, not necessarily with, but on a concert with the jazz ensemble at Eastern. Tonight at 7:30 at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston, a program called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz. And Mr. Sullivan is on the phone with me right now. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So this is your first year at Eastern, right?
Yes, it is.
What made you decide to come here after quite a number of years at Reno?
Well, because of budgetary issues in the state of Nevada, my job was eliminated.
Oh, well, that's a starter, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so I was looking for a position, and I saw this position open up, and I applied for it, and was fortunate enough to be selected. I received my undergraduate degree at Illinois State, so it's kind of neat coming back to the Midwest, where it all started.
Yeah, a little bit of a homecoming for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so you're the second in a series of interim directors, I guess.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, because Barry Hauser was there last year, and I guess now the former director of bands, Milt Allen, was interim at Ohio State, and I've heard a rumor that he won't be interim or something.
Yeah, I knew that he went to Ohio State, but I'm not really sure, if it's interim or a full time or. But, I wish him well.
Yeah, well, I always enjoyed talking with him, and now I'm going to enjoy talking with you. So
I hope so.
Yeah, how's the start been there?
It has been a whirlwind. I was I got to town about 4 days before marching band camp started, so it was a real short amount of time to get prepared and, jumped into it with both feet. And fortunately, the kids are great here. The kids have been amazing, and the faculty support is just terrific, and we have a wonderful department chair here. So it has been, even though it has been a lot of work in a very short amount of time, just tremendous support from everybody around here.
So you're doing the Wind Symphony, and the marching band.
Yeah, I am doing the marching band and the basketball bands and the Wind Symphony, and I've got some private conducting students this semester, so it's really a busy semester for me.
And marching band, I notice, has been a particular emphasis of yours, because you were doing that at Reno and
right.
Certainly with various high schools.
Uh-huh.
What do you find especially fun about marching band? There's got to be plenty.
As a percussionist, I just like the energy of the activity. In some cases, the physicality that is involved.
And I'm assuming that you enjoy, because I notice you seem to do it for some other folks as well, the writing of
drill design.
The drill design.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Yep. It's a creative outlet. With different people, they have different gifts and talents, and I seem to be able to write drill that works pretty well and is effective. And, the schools that have used me as a drill designer have had some success with the drills that I've written for them. So
I remember when I was in marching band in high school, I was always amazed that the folks that wrote these drills, because I thought, how do you visualize all that? But I guess, as you say, it takes a special talent.
Yeah, and a process. I've been really fortunate to study with some really great drill designers and really great teachers who have given me a process, and I go through a process of first analyzing the music, and then I actually sit down and doodle and sketch and finally go to the paper and chart everything out.
Seems to me somebody told me once that there are also now some computer programs that help with that.
Yes, which is computer programs have been out for several years, and it has sure made life a lot easier. When I first started writing drill, I was doing it the old-fashioned way by hand, and now the computer programs are just a tool, just like once upon a time acetate sheets and pens were a tool, but you still have to come up with the ideas for motion.
I read an article that your daughter is in the marching band.
Yes, she is. My youngest daughter came back to the Midwest with me, and she's here to keep me company and kind of help out around the house. She just graduated from high school, and she's playing snare in the band, and I'm really proud. I'm a very proud father.
And how does she like working with Mr. Sullivan?
Well, that's the weirdest part for her is to call me Mr. Sullivan, and I do ask her to do it when we're in on a full ensemble rehearsal. But she, for years since she started playing, she's always had it as one of her goals to be in, you know, be a student in one of my bands, and she's finally doing that, and you know, she's just having a ball here. So, she's playing. The drum line is really good, and some great instruction going on, and she's just really enjoying herself.
So the program that you're conducting tonight at the Doudna is along with the jazz ensemble, and the program's called "Life in the Groove: The Influence of Jazz."
Uh-huh.
And we let in with one of those pieces that will be on the program, "Grace and Dance" of David Holsinger. How that, I mean, just listening to that for myself, what I mostly hear is sort of jazzy rhythms. Is there more to it than that?
Well, he uses a few jazz harmonies in some of the accompanying lines, but very rhythmically, definitely rhythmically, it's jazz. There's also some, I want to call them big band shouts with some of the brass. And, you know, you'll hear brass play some kicks that are very, very reminiscent of a jazz ensemble.
Okay, now you use two terms that that I don't know what they mean, a shout and a kick.
A shout is just a louder section with the brass, and I use the term kick when there are, you know, short rhythmic figures that the brass are playing and interspersing with what's going on with the rest of the ensemble.
Does the title of the program, Influence of Jazz, suggest that a jazz influence is pervasive in contemporary band music, or was it relatively easy to find from a small number of pieces that have this influence?
You know, there are several pieces that do have a jazz influence, either rhythmically or harmonically, or in many cases melodically. You know, not every piece is influenced by jazz, but there are many pieces that are, and quite often a lot of band composers that are writing literature for the wind band also write for jazz ensembles. So there's a kind of a nice crossover there with many pieces.
Are you actually going to be playing anything with the jazz ensemble, or are these sort of two halves of the same concert?
It's two halves of the program. The jazz ensemble will open up with the first half, and then we will do our thing the second half after the set change.
So that's probably a good way to go about it, because then folks can hear sort of original jazz, and then they can draw their own conclusions of how much of that shows up in the writing for Wind Symphony.
Right, exactly. You know, they should be able to hear, again, some of the rhythmic figures, and with Grace and Dance, the way that just drives forward, like a driving big band chart.
Is Grayson a person, by the way? Do you know how
yeah,
got that?
Yeah, Grayson is Dr. Holsinger's third child, and he wrote, for each of his children, he wrote a different piece that is reflective of their personalities. And I guess Grayson is a little bit more rambunctious than his other two kids.
I was going to say, he sounds like a handful.
Yeah.
In that case. Another piece that's on the program is called Band Dancing,
uh-huh.
One word with
yep.
one D in there by Jack Stamp in a number of different movements. We'll, why don't we just sample that first, and then you can talk about it a little bit after. This is the opening movement. It's called City Shuffle and is played here by the North Texas Wind Symphony led by Eugene Corporon. We're talking with Alan Sullivan, who's going to be directing the Wind Symphony at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston tonight at 7:30 in the Doudna Fine Arts Center. And you're listening to Live and Local. Thank you. We heard City Shuffle from a set of pieces called Band Dancing by Jack Stamp, and it was played here by the North Texas Wind Symphony. You can hear the complete set of dances played by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony tonight at 7:30 at the Down of Fine Arts Center. We'll be led by the interim director of bands there, Alan Sullivan, who's on the phone with me right now. So these other movements have not necessarily jazzy titles, tango, waltz, and then slow dance and last dance. So they're obviously dance forms, but jazz shows up somehow.
Yeah, you know, when I selected this, I could hear a big band or a combo or, you know, a jazz ensemble performing each of these movements at, you know, different places. Whether, for example, the last dance, you know, I could close my eyes and kind of see back in, you know, imagine being back in maybe the mid-40s and it's getting towards the end of, you know, a dance and all the soldiers and, you know, their dates dancing to this, you know, the slow dance to this last, the last piece. So, you know, there was a real nice, I felt a real nice connection between jazz and these short dance movements.
So in this case, it's sort of like a big band dance band.
Exactly. And the tango, you know, that's another one. It's Dr. Stamp's tango, which is the second movement of this piece. Again, you can kind of feel and see, you know, the two people out there dancing the tango while the band is live in the background.
Well, it's certainly a fun set of pieces, and I imagine the kids are enjoying playing these pieces?
Yeah, they are. It was a little bit different for them at first because it's not just straight dance music or straight jazz, and he uses quite a lot of meter changes, especially in the first movement and the last movement, which were kind of weird for the kids to grasp onto at first. But, I mean, as wonderful of musicians as they are, it didn't take very long until they had really grasped some of the concepts of style in this piece.
Any idea how many of the kids in the Wind Symphony are also in the jazz ensemble?
I think there's probably between 6 and 10.
So a pretty good percentage. What is there, 50 or so in the band or something?
Yeah.
So they ought to be bringing in, presumably those kids might have an easier time with some of these rhythms.
Yeah, but as musicians, you know, we all have to, whether you're playing in a big band or not, need to be familiar with varied styles and varied rhythms and melodic directions and harmonic structures in order to communicate composer's intent, whether it's in a jazz setting or, you know, an orchestral setting or a band setting, to be able to communicate the composer's intent in a very artistic manner.
I noticed from your bio that before you started working at the University of Nevada in Reno, you worked with a number of different high school bands,
right?
And the other piece that's on your program we're going to be hearing played by a high school band in just a little bit. And I wonder what you find, some of the particular differences you find in working with a high school band versus a college band, aside presumably from just the generally higher level of performance that you can get out of a college band.
You know, in a lot of ways, I used to have a teacher tell me, you know, the only difference between a high school kid and a college kid is their size of their clothes. And I didn't quite fully it took me a while to fully understand that. And yeah, the college musicians have much more training, a more refined sound, have greater concepts of nuance. But, you know, a note on a trumpet, regardless of, you know, what your student is a note on a trumpet. Now, that note from an older student who has been studying is going to have much better clarity and better tone quality and better intonation, but, you know, a B-flat is a B-flat. So it's in the at the lower levels, the high school levels or middle school levels, it's a matter of teaching to refine and develop those younger musicians and keep developing them so they improve not only how they're reading music and how they're reading rhythms and the performance of those, but also how they're performing as individuals and hopefully improving them in terms of individual tone quality and their levels of musicianship.
And then when you get to the upper levels of college, then it's probably a little less of teaching the sound of the instrument and a little more of emphasis on the musicianship?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with the kids that I work with, I don't have to worry about, you know, this is what you need to do to have proper tone quality. You know, I really don't have to worry about talking to them about air support and, you know, basic embouchure, because they have gotten that and are getting that from their private teachers here at the university. You know, I get to work with things about making sure that rhythms are lining, you know, full ensemble things are lining up, rhythms are lining up, and that harmonic structures are developing the way that they're supposed to, and being able to play with different colors that are available with the wind band, and working to shape phrases and trying to get as much nuance out of the music as possible. So in some ways it's a lot more challenging, because you're not always, you know, you're not working with the nuts and bolts of individual playing. You're working with how much music and how much nuance and how much shape can you get out of each and every phrase in the literature.
Well, I've heard some of the musicians who study at Eastern, and they certainly have some fine players down there and some very fine teachers. And you have joined the group down there of those sorts of folks. And I certainly wish you well for this year as your interim year as director of bands there. We're talking with Alan Sullivan at Eastern Illinois University. He's directing the Wind Symphony in the concert with the Jazz Ensemble tonight at the Dowden Fine Arts Center. It's called Life in the Groove, the Influence of Jazz. And this group we're going to hear next sounds like a pretty good high school band. They're from Lapeer, Michigan. It's the Lapeer West High School Symphony Band. And the last piece, is this the last piece in the program, Bayou Breakdown?
Yes, it is. We'll be closing with Bayou Breakdown, and hopefully kind of leave everybody with kind of a smile on their face after this selection.
And it's by Brant Carrick, the name of the composer. Thanks, Alan, very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
And it's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. From Lapeer, Michigan, that was the Lapeer West High School Symphony Band, music by Brent Carrick called Bayou Breakdown, which will be on a concert by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony tonight at 7:30 at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. They're performing a program along with the Jazz Ensemble at Eastern. You're listening to Live and Local. Stay tuned next for a rebroadcast of a conversation from March of 2010 with folk singer Bilk Staines. Bill Staines, a man who has been working for more than 40 years, traveling across America in his car. And he's going to be in Peoria Sunday night at 7 o'clock at Forest Park Nature Center. Any reference, I think we took them out, but any reference from that rebroadcast to performance in Urbana is vestigial. The performance with Bill Staines will be in Peoria on Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. Our broadcast today on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. On October 20th at 7 a.m., our fall pledge drive begins with a power hour. You can help make this a success with a contribution of $25, $50, or $75 now to our member match fund. We'll use your gift to challenge others to give as well. And you can also make your gift online at willpledge.org. Help fuel the service that brings you in-depth news coverage and provocative music and performances all year long. A traditional song called Going to the West, sung by Bill Staines here on Live and Local. And as you said, that was a traditional song. Mostly you do your own songs, right?
I do mostly my own stuff, but my roots are in traditional music. At least when I started playing, I was listening to, you know, a lot of the ballads that Joan Baez was singing and a lot of the songs out of the folk songs of North America, you know, that Alan Lomax or John Lomax collected, and that's what people were doing at the time. I mean, even if you listen to the Kingston Trio, a lot of it was traditional music, traditional ballads that had a sort of a modern, a contemporary arrangement to them. But so I've always loved traditional music and the traditional melodies, and I think a lot of the folk melodies, the beautiful folk melodies have been around so long because, you know, they're beautiful, I think almost a lot of the traditional melodies is a foundation for the melodies that I write.
You refer to melody specifically. Are there other criteria that get you interested in covering a particular traditional song or maybe a song by somebody else?
Well, you know, melody is the thing that attracts me to the song first. I think obviously there are melodies and lyrics to a song. If the melody is compelling and the lyrics are compelling for any song, that enables that song to stay around for a long time. People want to hear the song over and over. If it has something to say, you know, if there's something of value in the song, then that enables that song to stay around for a long time. I try, in my own writing, to be as universal as possible with the melodies and make the melodies accessible, you know, singable. I do a lot of songs with choruses in them, and then I try and bring something of value to people through my music. There are sort of people, you know, I don't want to necessarily get up every day and write a song about my coffee cup or something like that. It's like, you know, because nobody really cares about my coffee cup. But now and again,
something will come along and tap me on the shoulder. And I said, you know, I need to share this experience with people, or I've learned something that's important out of this experience, and I need to share that with people. And that's where the songs generally come from.
I have your disc here called The First Million Miles, referring to the amount of amount that you do drive. Any of those songs on there that might be particularly illustrative of what you're just talking about, of something that really might have special meaning to might bring something to the listener, especially.
I'm trying to think of what's on that album. Let's try Down the Road. I mean, that's a real positive song, and I think that would illustrate it a little bit.
Okay, Down the Road of Bill Staines, who's also the performer here on Live and Local.
I do believe there will be waiting for me somewhere down the road another song. There's a day worth living down the road. If the way seems long and slow, remember when you go. There's a day worth living down the road.
A song called Down the Road by Bill Staines, performed by the same man, from his disc, which is a compilation, is called The First Million Miles. And he's here with us on Live and Local on the telephone from just outside Columbus, Ohio, I think you said. When you're writing your own songs, I know that a lot of them get picked up by other people and have shown up in various places, including films and so on. Do you give any thought at all to having someone else sing the song besides yourself? I know you said that you try to make the melodies universally accessible.
Well, as far as other people recording my songs, you know, I always think, you know, sometimes people will say, or an artist will say, well, I don't have any children, but my paintings are my children, or a choreographer would say my dances are my children. But when it comes to songwriting, you know, it really makes sense because, like, you, the song enters the world, the song is born. And you need to nurture the song because nobody knows it. If you don't sing it yourself, then it basically it dies. It doesn't go anywhere. If it's a healthy song, if it's a good song, then it begins to grow, and then it eventually begins to develop relationships with other people the same way a child would. And then much farther on down the line, it's grown, it's become involved in all these different relationships, and eventually those relationships don't have anything to do with you anymore. It's like, you know, it's like your son or daughter grows up and discovers a cure for some disease or something like that, and well, you're proud of the child, but it's out there doing whatever it's going to do, and that really doesn't have anything to do with you anymore. It develops a life of its own. And so when people record my songs, I'm glad that they like the song. I'm glad that they're, you know, but everybody has their own interpretation of it, whether it be in an arrangement or whether it be the tempo or what it means to them personally. And that really doesn't have anything to do with me. And so somebody will ask me, what do you think of this artist's recording of your song? And it's like, well, that's their version of it, you know, so long as the guitar is in tune, I guess, or something like that. But and only once or twice has an artist, sort of changed the words where it's not quite what the meaning of the song was sort of compromised. But generally speaking, of all the people that recorded the songs, it's just there are all kinds of versions of the Roseville Fair, you know. But you know, it really, you know, I have my version of it. Liam Clancy has his version of it, which is wonderful. And so that really, you know, that really doesn't have anything to do with me anymore. So I just sort of sit back and enjoy it.
Since you mentioned the song, I wonder if that wouldn't be a good one for our listeners to hear right now.
Let's do it.
That's from also collected on The First Million Miles. What was that? Which album was that originally from?
It was originally from an album called The Whistle of the Jay.
The Whistle of the Jay. And I'm just amazed that you can just pull these off the top of your head. We've got, what, some 26 albums or so by now?
That's, yeah. And, well, you know, it's, I mean, I guess it's, I don't know. I know the albums. I've lived with them for many years.
And, of course, lived with all the songs and wrote them. Roseville Fair, sung and written by Bill Staines here on Live and Local. I love the analogy you made just before we played that of songs to children or offspring. And do I understand right that you have a son who is also a folk singer?
My son, Bowen, well, he's a wonderful musician. Actually, he graduated from Savannah College of Art and Film and Television. So he's been working on documentaries now for National Geographic and he has his own little film company. So he's a wonderful musician, and he marries the music, but I think his real passion is film.
And does he suggest that you've got some influence on him other than the obvious fact that you sing and he sings?
Well, you know, I think for any person, any child that's growing up in a family that's musical, where there's music being played all the time, it's hard to not be influenced by that musical experience. You know, I don't know if I've had any influence in style, as far as style on performance, but he certainly has, you know, been surrounded by music his whole life, so I'm sure in that way it's an influence.
Do you have more than the one child?
No.
A lot of your songs have shown up in grade school books and so on. Do you feel a particular affinity to either writing for children or songs that seem to be particularly appropriate for them?
Well, you know, not really. Once again, it's A Place in the Choir has a life of its own. I mean, it's sung in church choirs and, you know, in grade schools and, you know, and it's just come out as an illustrated children's book. And, you know, once again, it's just that, you know, when I wrote it, it was almost like a doodle, you know, and I wasn't sure I even liked the song. And then many, many years later, it's sort of become a, you know, I guess a folk classic. You know, I don't write specifically for children or anything like that, but occasionally a song will come out that the children love. I mean, I'm amazed at sometimes, you know, a 10-year-old child or you know, will come up to me and say, I really like the song, The Lost Mine of the Chisas, which is about this lost mine in the middle of the desert in Texas. And it's like, why would this child be interested in this song? You know, or it's just, you just never know. I've done albums of, I don't even really call them children's albums. I call them more like a family album. The Happy Wanderer and One More River were two albums I did for Red House. And there are songs like Home on the Range and Kookaburra and a lot of traditional stuff, plus some songs that I've written. There's one called Four Little Sailors, which is all about the joy of reading, if you will, and how important it is. And so, you know, I've written some songs that children seem to be attracted to.
I guess I'll find out on Saturday night, but when you're doing your shows now, do you like to go back through the whole catalog of your own songwriting history, or do you tend to focus on the more recent ones? And by any chance, is that why you keep writing songs, so you've got more new stuff to sing?
Well, you know, my shows sort of evolve. I mean, there are songs I wrote 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, that I still do. And I love doing them. The Roseville Fair, for instance, was written back in 1977. Song River, which I close every show with, was written back in 76, I believe, 75 or 76. And then I do, as I write a song, I do the more recent songs also. And everything in between. I've been writing a lot on the keyboards lately, and that's not. And I'm not somebody you would hire to play keyboards. And so, some of the songs I write on the keyboards travel to the guitar so that I do them in concert, and some of them get recorded, and I don't do them in concert, even though I may like the song. So it's a little bit, and I tell some stories, and I always love to have people sing along on the choruses because I grew up in the '60s, and that's what everybody did, and that's what I still enjoy doing. So it's pretty much a straight across the board thing.
Just one more question before we let you go and before we play one more song of yours, and that's the way you hold your guitar.
Well, I play the guitar upside down. It's basically a right-handed guitar, but I'm playing it as if it were left-handed. So I just, when I was about 11 years old, somebody handed me a guitar, and I knew I was left-handed. So I figured, I could tell the right-handed way, and I just flipped it over and said, well, that must be the left-handed way of playing it, and put my fingers where the dots were in the chord book, and then it was 40 years later. So it's not something you see every day, but it's not something you see every day, but it's something that that's not all that rare. I mean, Jimi Hendrix played upside down, Elizabeth Cotton, Albert King plays upside down. So it's always the same story, which is like, well, it was basically youthful ignorance, and I never took any guitar lessons.
And there are left-handed guitars, I guess.
Yes, there are.
But I don't think people use those it seems like it's about equally. Either use a left-handed guitar, or they do what you're doing, or they just stay left-handed but do it the right-handed way.
Right.
Of course, the irony is, being left-handed, a right-hander fingers with his left hand. But I guess is the feeling more in what you do with your right hand, with your dominant hand, is in the plucking.
Well, you know what I think it is more than anything? Because, you know, when you're playing the keyboard, you have both hands out in front of you. So is there a dominant hand? I mean, there's no way of playing the keyboards upside down. So I think what it is more than anything is it's actually the physical makeup of the instrument. It's like, you know, if you were left-handed and you wanted to, use a bow and arrow, for instance, you would want to extend your right arm with the bow and pull back with your left arm. And I think the guitar is the same way. The guitar is essentially, forgive the analogy, but it's sort of like a rifle. I mean, you want to extend your right hand. And so I think that's what it is more than one dominant hand over another. It's not that one likes to pick and one likes to fret. I think it's really just the physical makeup of the instrument.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time for joining us to join us here on the program today. I might as well mention that if folks want to have some of your songs of their own, not only just recorded, but also written down, you've got a number of songbooks.
There's one songbook available that's published by Hal Leonard Corporation. There was another one before that that's out of print, but I think someday I'll get it all together to put all the songs in one book. But there is at least one that's out published by Hal Leonard.
And what's that one called?
It's called Music to Me, the Songs of Bill Staines. And there are about 30 or 35 songs in that book.
And for more information on Bill Staines, you can go to his website, which is acousticmusic.com. And is it /Staines or?
Yeah, it is /Staines. Or you can just go to Google and type in Bill Staines.
That's how I found it. And we're very pleased to have had you on the show today. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
We are crossing the water our whole life through. We are making a passage that is straight and true. Every heart is a vessel. Every dream is a light shining through the light. Shining through the darkness of the blackest night.
Bill Staines. That interview actually was first broadcast in March of 2010, and when he was in town for a performance in Urbana. He's going to be in town for a performance in Peoria Sunday night at 7 o'clock at Forest Park Nature Center. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Just a few events I have a chance to mention elsewhere in our listening area. Illinois State University's jazz ensembles are performing tonight at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. That's at 8 o'clock tonight. The Hoagland Center in Springfield presents the musical Ragtime, 7:30 tonight and tomorrow, and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Illinois Wesleyan University's wind ensemble performs at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts this evening at 5:30. The Boneyard Jazz Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5, followed at 9 o'clock by Bruiser and the Virtues. Parkland College Theater presents Tennessee at 100, a series of one-act plays. There are two different shows, including tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. Check their website for more complete information. The Mudbugs play roots music at Blue Grouch Pub in Springfield this evening at 8:30. And Caleb Cook and the Hot Slugs are at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana tonight at 9 o'clock. On Saturday, it's Black Magic Johnson at JB's in Taylorville at 8:30. Ricky Lee Jones is at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Saturday at 7:30. Matthew Curry and The Fury have their CD release party at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. And it's the Miles Davis Experience featuring the Ambrose Akinmusari Quintet at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7:30. Many other things going on in our listening area, including Millikan University Opera Theater presenting the Coronation of Poppaea at Kuiper Hall in Decatur Saturday at 4 o'clock, and the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra opening concert at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur Saturday at 7:30. Support for our show comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods in the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the series collector to the first-time buyer, and wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR classical music and more for Central Illinois.